This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't think I'm coming in tomorrow, unless there's a problem, and we'll just pray that there won't be a problem. It is episode 379. I am a little low on energy, but that's only because it's that time of the year. Twice a year, I do a longer fast than normal. So where I normally just fast on Wednesdays, twice a year, I just go ahead and fast Wednesday and then the Thursday and then sometimes the Friday. Although last time I chickened out last time and just gave up after Wednesday and Thursday and started eating again on Friday because I was in the middle of something and I needed my energy. I needed to get it done. I forget what it was, but there was some reason I just thought, you know, you just need to get this going. And so we'll see what happens this time. I'm at actually a very good spot to do this because I finished up all the files for the Kindle and the print version and the EPUB, got all those files done as of last night. I'd been working on it since Sunday night. But I have all the files. I think the proof copy for the printed proof is going to be waiting for me when I get home, so I can order the, if everything looks good, I can go ahead and order the copies that I'm going to give away, get that under control for book 4, Windfall, A Seed Discarded. So, like I said, I've got the Kindle copy done, I've got the EPUB version done, I just have to update the website. This probably won't be able to do it this evening, but, you know, so I'm pretty well coasting tomorrow. So we'll see, but this is Thursday afternoon, and the last time I had anything to eat was Tuesday evening. So I'm a little underpowered at this point, but you know, we're doing okay. I just gotta get home without running into something, and We'll be all right. I read some study. The reason I'm doing this is I read some study that said that if you fast for 48 to 72 hours, it's like hitting the big reset button on your immune system, that your immune system gets rid of a bunch of stuff to conserve energy, kind of does a garbage collection on your immune system, and remanufactures all kinds of stuff when you start eating again. And so I've got it on my list of things to do that twice a year I do at least a 2-day fast. And this is the second day of that. So it was a little rough this morning. but I got her done. Get her done, and so I'll at least fast till tomorrow morning, and then maybe we'll see, depending on what I'm doing and how I'm doing. We'll see. So anyways, book 4 is done. Now it's getting about time to swing back to book 5. In the process of that, I think I've mentioned that I had to change the parable on book 5, and so now it's the parable of the red sky, which isn't really a parable. It's Jesus just kind of quoting a saying. But this past week I've had a lot of conversations with good friends, and this past week I've been polling my friends and saying, what do you think this means? Had a breakfast with a buddy on Saturday and a breakfast with a buddy on Monday morning, and a dinner with a buddy on Tuesday, and then a breakfast with a buddy this morning. And what does this mean? Because I think I mentioned it last week. You know, the Jews come seeking a sign from Jesus, and he basically just quotes this saying, and then he says, a wicked and adulterous generation seeks a sign, and no sign will be given to it except the sign of Joseph, Jonah. And then he basically storms off. And if you look at the Greek, when it says he turns and walked away, that if I read my Greek stuff right, I've got to go check it again. It really sounds like he just stormed off. He's mad. Which is not the behavior that we expect. This is Matthew 16, by the way, if you're interested in looking that up. And my buddy this morning, he said, so the sign of Jonah, he said, I know what that is. What? And so I looked it up and basically just says, for as Jonah was in the belly of the whale for 3 days and three nights, so will the Son of Man be. And then he goes on a little bit, I think, to elaborate. He says, and on that day, the people of Nineveh will rise up because they heard what Jonah was saying and they repented, and they will rise up to condemn you because there is someone greater than Jonah in your midst. And on that day, the queen of whatever it was, Sheba or something, will rise up and condemn you because she traveled all the way to Israel to hear the wisdom of Solomon. There's one greater in your midst than Solomon. He really unloads on them when they ask for a sign. So I was getting different reactions and trying to come up with something that I could use as a turnaround, a gotcha, something in book five. And I think I've got enough now that I kind of know where I'm going with it. But it's interesting. One of my buddies said, when I brought it up, he said, you know, that's interesting, you should bring that up. He said, I was in college, and he said, I heard a sermon on that message. And the thrust of the sermon was, see, just like you read the signs of the times, you should be looking around and paying attention to the signs of Jesus coming. You know, you should be seeking those signs. My buddy said that he got back to his room at college and he looked up the scripture passage and he kind of frowned because he said, I thought, I don't think that's what that means. And when you really look at it, it's not what Jesus is saying. Jesus is saying, you know, a wicked and adulterous generation looks for signs. It's pretty harsh. That's pretty harsh. So I'm working on it. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see what there is to see and say what there is to say eventually. So I think that's Tracy. I just looked up and I saw the car behind me, and I think maybe it's somebody I know, but they turned off, so I was getting ready to roll down my window and wave at them. Anyways, so writing's going fine, everything's going fine, having breakfasts and dinners with good friends. I love that. Highly recommend that. Great. It's just great. Get a chance to talk about a bunch of interesting stuff. Hit the microphone there. I really am low on energy. Oh, but let's get through this. So, lots of little interesting squirrely stuff I've been tagging to talk about. But I read this article. And when I read it, I thought, oh, I'm so sorry. And at first, when I read it, I thought, well, there's an example of escalation. Because I've talked in the past about fear and how fear escalates. And I thought, well, there's an example of escalation. And it may be, but I think we could find examples well of this type of anxiety, and specifically escalation in women, but I think we could find examples of this type of anxiety in men as well, unfortunately. But what struck me by this person's testimony of what it's like to have high-functioning anxiety, I just thought, wow, you know, I'm so sorry. And when I got to the end of the article, I thought, you know, you are not far from potentially a solution. Now, I do not suffer from high-functioning anxiety. But I do recognize the flesh. And I recognize when the flesh is seeking to destroy a person. And I have found, at least in my life, and in, you know, the lives of some of my friends who have tried to apply the principle of the flesh and the spirit, that there is a solution for these things. But I certainly would not go so far as to believe just a few little words could solve the depth of what is going on here. But I really hope that this woman at some point in her life gets free of this, because this is not good. The author of the article is Sarah Schuster. And the article, as I said, is called What It's Like to Have High-Functioning Anxiety. So she says, high-functioning anxiety looks like achievement, busyness, perfectionism. When it sneaks out, it transforms into nervous habits, nail-biting, foot-tapping, running my fingers through my hair. If you look close enough, you can see it in unanswered text messages, flakiness, nervous laughter, the panic that flashes through my eyes when a plan changes, when anything changes. I think, you know, underneath this all, there's this, obviously, this fear and this need of control, this need to have everything in its little box. She says, high-functioning anxiety feels like a snake slithering up my back, clamping its jaws shut where my shoulders meet my neck, punching the gut, stomach aches, like my body is confusing answering an email with being attacked by a lion. She says, high-functioning anxiety sounds like you're not good enough, you're a bad friend, you're not good at your job, you're wasting time, you're a waste of time, your boyfriend doesn't love you, you're so needy. What are you doing with yourself? Why would you say that? What if they hate it? Why can't you have your stuff together? You're going to get anxious, and because you're going to get anxious, you're going to mess everything up. You're a fraud, just good at faking it. You're letting everyone down. No one likes you. And she says, all the while, it appears perfectly calm. This is a sad way to live. So she goes on to talk about the fact that it's always looking for the next outlet, something to channel the never-ending energy, writing, running, list-making, mindless tasks, whatever keeps you busy, doing jumping jacks in the kitchen, dancing in the living room, pretending it's fun when really it's a choreographed routine of desperation trying to tire out the thoughts stuck in your head. It's that sharp pang of saying the wrong thing, the one that starts the cycles of thoughts because you said too much and nobody cares and it makes you never want to speak up again. It's going back and forth between everyone else has it together but you. And so many people have it tougher than you. Quote, get your act together. Suck it up. You're not okay. You're messing everything up. You're totally okay. Stop being a baby. Wow. It's feeling unqualified to write this piece because I'm getting by. It's when you're social enough to get invited to things, but so often find yourself standing in the room when it feels like no one knows you. It's being good at conversation and bad at making close friends because you only show up when you feel well enough. Only text back when you feel ready. because you're afraid they'd hate you if they really knew that the energy would overwhelm them and you'd lose them. I mean, and it just, this goes on and on. And the person who posted this, you know, said on my Facebook, said, yep, that's about how I feel all the time. It's when answering a text impulsively and thoughtlessly is an act of bravery. It's when fighting against your own need, it's fighting against your own need to constantly prove you right to exist in the world. It's learning how to validate your own feelings, even though you don't feel like you're enough and you will never be enough. It's knowing you're at least anxious enough to benefit from help, then admitting that you don't, that it doesn't confirm voices' lies, that taking a break doesn't mean that you're a failure. And then she got down into this part, and I thought, okay, you're getting closer. You're getting closer. It's a way to live with this constant companion, your bullying twin. Collapsible luggage that you can bury at a moment's notice, shove it under the bed, pretend it's not there until you can't fit anymore, you can no longer ignore it, until you have to face it. The bullying companion, because that's precisely what it is. This is flesh. Now, what's interesting is she does have the beginning of the steps. She says a good first step is staring at it straight on and calling it by its name. She said high anxiety can be a natural consequence of a busy lifestyle, but its existence is akin to the chicken and the egg, in her opinion. Which came first, the anxiety or the busyness? Am I always moving because I'm anxious? Or am I anxious? Looks like there's a policeman down here for something. Or am I anxious because I'm always moving? Either way, it's not a noble way to suffer. It's not a better way to be anxious. Just because you're functioning doesn't always mean that you're happy. And just because you're functioning doesn't mean you shouldn't slow down, breathe, and take 1 second to be happy the way things are. In this very moment, this quiet, short moment, to remember the peace that you found in that second of silence until the electricity starts again and you're forced to move. So, you know, the core there. Okay, there's a fire truck coming back the other direction. There's 2 fire trucks coming back the other direction. I wonder what that means. I don't see any big, huge plume of smoke where my house is supposed to be, so hopefully it doesn't mean that. But she's close. She's close. I think one of the real advantages to the idea of understanding flesh and spirit, in understanding that it really is a bullying companion. But it's really a bullying companion that has nothing more to harass you with than the thoughts it feeds into your brain. And once you start realizing that this voice inside you is doing everything that it can to distract you and to cause you to believe something that is not true, I think there's a real key that then helps us deal with this. And that is, as I've chatted with friends about, the critical thing, I think, and I've said this before on the podcast, is to always try to figure out what lie the flesh is telling you. So in this case, rambled off a ton of lies that this lady knows her flesh is telling her. One moment, I'm getting my mail. The piece that she doesn't have is calling that thing a lie and doing it in such a way that she actually believes it's a lie. And I found the best way to do that is through prayer and is through the reminder to ourselves of who we are in God. Because for all of these things that she expressed, not being good enough, you know, slowing everybody down, so it's, there is a place in God that you can say, you know what, maybe I am all those things, maybe I am insufficient, but I know God loves me. And maybe even if I can't even, I'm backing into my garage, maybe if I can't even imagine how that's possible that God would love me, God still loves me. He loves me at the beginning of the day. He loves me at the end of the day. It doesn't really matter what I do. He is with me. He is never going to forsake me. He will always be with me. He will always reach for me and want the best for me. And what's amazing in that process is I've found in my life that when I hear that lie, you're not good enough, and then what follows on, and it'll be disastrous because you're going to fail. You know, okay, well, I may not be good enough, but God loves me, and if I do fail, He'll still be there for me. And so even as the flesh is pounding us with all these thoughts, I think the escape is quietness that she was talking about. The escape is focusing on what God has done in our lives, the adoration that God has for us. And I've found that it's especially important not just to focus on it in your mind, but to speak that out, to hear yourself saying it. Many, many years ago when I was putting up a new name and address system and it was a Big Bang implementation, we just had to cut over. I don't like those kind of implementations, but we needed to do it in this case. And it was in 2003, and that day when I got up, I could just feel the pressure on my neck. I was driving in, I don't know, about 6:30 in the morning. All those lies. It's not going to work. You're going to be embarrassed. It's going to crash and burn. It's not going to work. You know, blah, blah, blah. We had done our due diligence. I mean, we had tested. We had been running in parallel for weeks. Testing, testing, testing. Sorry. And in the midst of feeling all that, I started in. Out loud. In the car. As I'm driving. My God, I thank you that you have loved me and that you have helped us with this project, that every time we hit a hurdle, you helped us find an answer. I thank you for today. I thank you that you knew today was going to come about long before I ever reached it. I thank you that you already know what is going to be this evening long before I ever reached it. And I thank you most of all that you have loved me, and you will love me, and you will continue to love me. And how much you love me. I'm having trouble putting all these thoughts together because I'm low energy. And your love for me is exactly the same this morning as it's going to be this evening. So no matter what happens, if I am disgraced, if I am exalted, you still love me, and that will never change. And it's amazing how you start praying that out loud and you start speaking to the lies that the flesh is trying to tell you, that you can dissipate that stress and you can find a place then of calm where previously there was no calm. So I hope this woman, someone comes into her path sooner or later that can help her understand the battle she's facing and can help her get some relief. Sorry, because lands, that just sounds like a miserable way to live. And I am so grateful that God's love for me has manifested itself in my life, and then he's given me the opportunity to live a different way. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.